Second hour, Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5, the game on this Thursday. 94.9 is the official English radio home of the Nashville Soccer Club. They will be right back at it tomorrow night as Nashville SC will host Toronto at Nissan Stadium. Pregame begins at 7:15 p.m. The match begins.
They have not changed your liner.
7:30. No?
No.
That was Toronto was last night.
Yeah, they played Montreal on Saturday.
I was going to say, I didn't think that was right.
No. Yeah. It's okay.
Take that out. Delete
I'm here to help.
So they beat Toronto in the playoffs last year.
Correct.
And now they've beaten Toronto again last night in a thriller. By the way, what was the attendance?
I knew you were going to ask me that, and I've
seen they've tarped off a bunch.
Yeah, so I'm going to get that info for you. I missed the announcement of what the attendance was last night. It sounded awesome. Like, it sounded great. It was. I understand it was a Wednesday night, but I would say for a crowd for a Wednesday night, it wasn't bad. But I will get the actual number for you. It sounded amazing, though, especially with the late heroics in the game. Like, it sounded probably more than, you know, like more than it actually was. So
I guess I'm just trying to get a read, and I know we've had these conversations of what will this actually look like when they move into their new stadium. By the way, as they continue to move right along with that, and every time I go by there, it looks like it's getting, you know, it's starting to take shape. How about I put it that way? It's starting to take shape. And I just wonder how this is going to, because I do have a little bit different perspective, because I don't judge things now. One, it's a big, giant football stadium. It's not going to hold 69,000 or 70,000. 69,000, I guess, is the official sellout number at Nissan Stadium. It's going to be more than half of that, less than half of that. So I take that into account. But I also, because I realize it's, you know, it's not their true home.
17,008.
17,008 is what they announced?
Announced, yep.
Okay. So I don't, you know, I'm wondering, like, why haven't we seen 30,000 at these games? And so, and I don't know, what does a Wednesday night at the new stadium look like? Because, and the reason I bring this up, and I don't judge it, is because we had these same talks whenever the then Tennessee Oilers were at Vanderbilt. I remember sitting there at Vanderbilt in 1998, every home game going, looking around in the press box going, how in the world are they going to make this work in their new stadium? This place is almost half the size, and it's half full. Like, how are they going to make this work? How in the world is this going to work? Is this market really ready for the NFL? I mean, in 1998, I said that basically every week, and I was like, I don't know how this is going to work.
I went to a game at Vandy.
And then, you know, they move into their new place, and it obviously helped that they were good right out of the gates, but, you know, selling tickets was not an issue. Everything was sold out. So I ask you, just because you're around the Nashville SC folks all the time, do they feel like it's that, especially that first season, they move into the new home, is it going to be sellouts every game, just weekends? Like, what's the feel right now? What is the fan base? What do you think that number is right now? What do you think is the hardcore? Remember, we used to talk about this. Another thing that I lived through on the Predator side, it was like they had about 8,000 to 10,000 hardcore fans, and you knew you could get 8,000 to 10,000 depending on the night and the opponent in there, but it was trying to get the rest right back in the day, a decade ago. And so what is their base right now? What do you think? Is it 17,000? Is it,
well, I mean, think about this though.
Is it less?
If in the new stadium, 17,000, I mean, that's not bad. It's supposed to seat, what, 30, somewhere in that range? 17,000 for a Wednesday night I don't think is awful. You know, one thing is we look at, and it's hard to differentiate, that Nissan Stadium can hold 69,000. And that's just not a realistic number for a new team and for, you know, MLS in general right now. Also have to factor in that this is the first year that, I mean, they had the opening night, they went on the road, Then the pandemic happened. And so they're just at the point where they can have full capacity, really, in the last handful of games. I think 17,000 for a Wednesday night is a pretty good night.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the feel is that there's a lot of optimism around people with the club that, yeah, once we get to our home, it's kind of similar to what you were saying about the Titans, that that will be our home, and you'll have more people come out because they want to check out the new stadium and the new amenities and you know, all the things that they're putting in. I mean, they're going to have different clubs and all these things you would expect with, you know, a brand new stadium. So I think that that's certainly going to help. But show it to me. Let me see Saturday, because I would expect a pretty good crowd for Saturday.
What do you expect? In the 20s?
Yeah, I would say so. Maybe
25?
25, yeah.
Okay.
20, 24, 25, somewhere in there, Saturday night.
How many do Montreal bring? That was a joke.
Well, I mean, are they trapped across the border? So probably a few. I don't know. I mean, Toronto's playing their home games in Orlando. So that's where Toronto's been playing. And Montreal.
So they never left the bubble?
They were in where did they play? The playoff game was not in Orlando. It was somewhere up north. And then they moved to Orlando this year. Kind of like the Raptors moved to Tampa, you know, which was a smart move, you know, go south. But I think that it's going to get better now that school's out, now that you have no attendance issues to worry about when it comes to COVID, that you can go full bore. I think you're going to see bigger crowds in the summer now that the international break is over. It's something to certainly pay attention to, because you know, you want as many as possible to get people prepared for the move next year. But I think I if I had to guess, Saturday, 25, that'd be a good number.
At BW Author tweets at me and says, I was there a couple of weeks ago on a Sunday against Austin, and there were 25,000.
And that's perfect.
Yep. There you go.
I was at that game. That game, I had a lot of technical issues, so I wasn't really checking out the crowd all that much.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
One of those games you had to do a lot of sweating?
That was one of those that I needed bourbon, and I needed it bad.
You needed a stiff pour?
Oh, yeah. And everybody knew it, too. They're like, Chase needs a drink. But and I got one afterwards.
I bet you did.
It was good.
Let's get into the big announcement yesterday that happened at the end of our show that we didn't get a chance to address. But there was some big NASCAR news. I know we're just removed from a big NASCAR weekend in our market. But Jeff Gordon telling everybody that he is leaving the booth.
Yeah. This is not a big surprise for those that have kind of known this. To back up a little bit. 2004, there was an awful incident that happened with Hendrick Motorsports, a plane that was headed to Martinsville that had Rick Hendrick's son, brother. You had Randy Dorton, who was the chief engine builder. You had all these executives with Hendrick Motorsports. It crashed, and everybody on board was killed. When that happened, obviously the focus was on the family and the tragedy, but a lot of questions started to come up of, okay, what does that mean moving forward for Hendrick Motorsports? Because the heir apparent was always going to be Ricky Hendrick. Ricky had been a race car driver just like his dad. He had moved into the front office and was being groomed to one day take over Hendrick Motorsports. So since that happened, and after Jeff Gordon's driving career, Jeff has been very involved with the day-to-day operations at Hendrick Motorsports. His role has expanded over the years. He's worked a lot with the young drivers. I mean, you'll hear all the time, guys like William Byron or Chase Elliott or Kyle Larson now, you know, they reference Rick and Jeff, and they're talking about Jeff Gordon because he's had a big impact on that company. And so it was always kind of believed that Jeff would take over eventually. And so with yesterday's announcement that he is going to be vice chairman, he is going to be the number two in charge of Hendrick Motorsports starting January 1st. The only person that outranks him is Rick Hendrick. That has made it more and more apparent that he is going to take over whenever that day comes. Whenever Rick Hendrick steps away, or you know, he'll probably do it until he dies, because Rick has been around for as long as he has. But Rick's 71 years old.
As we learned on the Gatlinburg trip, because we talked about Rick Hendrick in the car ride, he's a billionaire.
Yeah, he's worth over $1 billion.
With a B?
Yeah.
He's a billionaire, so, yeah.
I mean, you think about, you know, those of you listening, you may think, well, he owns a race team. Like, that's made him all that money. Well, no, he owns a dealership, or several dealerships. HendrickCars.com is a company that has exploded and has made tons of money. So he has done very well. And that's actually how he got into it. He was a car dealer and bought a team. The movie Days of Thunder is loosely based on Rick Hendrick. And Cole Trickle is, you know, Jeff Bodine, essentially, starting that team. But so this is huge. I mean, this is a big move. And now Fox is going to have to figure out, you know, what to do. I never thought Jeff was great in that role. I thought he was better with Boyer, because Jeff was more of the serious type and Boyer is the funny type, and so they complemented each other. But, you know, it was a little awkward at first with him and Daryl, because, you know, Daryl had been doing it so long and there was the age gap and, you know, different eras. And I just never felt like Jeff was 100% comfortable. But this is going to be big for him moving forward, running, you know, helping run Hendrick Motorsports and having such a big role day to day. So pretty big move in NASCAR yesterday. NASCAR was also named Sports Business Journal's Sports League of the Year. That news came out as well, with the job they did coming back during the pandemic and being basically the first sport to come back. So going to be interesting to see, though, what Fox does moving forward, because I think they need somebody else, whether they put Larry Mack back in the booth, because he and Boyer really complement each other well. They could do that for a year or two, or bring in somebody else.
I suspect they'll bring in somebody else.
Probably. Even though I do like the idea of having the crew chief in there. I mean, NBC uses a four-person booth. Mm-hmm. They have, you know, Rick Allen, and then Steve Letarte, and then Dale Jr. and Jeff Burton. Now, sometimes they'll put Letarte on the pit box, or, you know, they'll move guys around. But I was right next to the TV booth in Nashville. All four were in there during the Cup race. So, you know, that's worked, I guess. But I would suspect you're right that, you know, maybe there's a retirement that we haven't heard about yet, that they could grab somebody. I know Kevin Harvick was rumored for, I guess before they got Gordon, that he would hang it up and go to the booth. I could see that happening eventually, probably not this year, but or they could just stick with Mike Joy and Clint Boyer, like they did, you know, when Darrell Waltrip retired. They just stuck with Mike Joy and Jeff Gordon. So who knows?
Yeah. Not good news in Knoxville, after there's been a whole lot of good news in Knoxville of late. The baseball team returned home yesterday, but now on the football side, I saw this morning where quarterback Caden Salter has been dismissed from the football program due to a second incident.
Mm.
Remember, he arrived in January, and he's already had two incidents. We know that he hasn't played it down, but I don't think he never practiced with him.
No.
He never even practiced with him. So, because he was suspended, remember, with an incident, I think it was an on-campus incident, I think in the dorms. And then he was suspended for months. And then he just got reinstated, I guess, at the beginning of this month.
And then he was involved again.
Right, and he's already involved in another incident over the weekend, or last weekend, where he was cited with the simple possession of a legal substance, I think it was marijuana, involving a traffic stop. And now he's been shown the door, so I guess it came down to Tennessee and Auburn. He chose the Vols, and now he's back out on the free market, so he can go wherever he wants to go. But Caden Salter is gone from the program, and it was short-lived. Not here very long. Good news for Tennessee is I don't think they were depending on him this year at all anyway.
No.
That room's pretty full. And a guy that never even practiced with the team, I don't think we were going to see him anytime soon, so won't see him now, period. So he will never suit up for the Vols, so wanted to pass that along.
I know there was, you know, there was talk about him that he could be something in the future. But yeah, you're right. I mean, he wasn't going to play this year. They have a lot to figure out in that department. But I think that Josh Heupel's coming in and he has set a standard. He's trying to build a new culture, and you're going to give a guy so many chances before it's like, yeah, no. If you're not going to buy in, then you're out. So I don't blame them at all. If he couldn't stay out of trouble, then show him the door. They got enough to worry about, you know, than to constantly worry about a freshman quarterback that's not going to play getting in trouble. So it's just not what.
Yeah, it's probably concerning because probably some fans are like, okay, so there was an incident at the dorm. Okay, he got a traffic stop last weekend. Maybe it was some pot. What? A lot of people are like, really? But you don't know all the conversations that went on behind the scenes. And for a guy that's never even practiced with the team, a guy that arrived in January, a guy that's already been suspended for months, and you don't know all the conversations that were had, and if you're sitting there as the new head coach and you just see that the light is on but nobody's home, or maybe the light's not even on, like he's not comprehending, this is going to be an issue, I don't have any problem with it. Like, clearly they think, like, you know what, this isn't even worth it. If this kid right now, just currently, the way it sits, he's young. There's a, you know, can he figure this out? Sure, everybody hopes that he can. But maybe he doesn't. And clearly they don't feel like he's going to figure it out anytime soon, and they don't want the headache. So they're willing just to move on. And sometimes you need tough love. Sometimes you need a slap in the face. You need a wake-up call as a young person. Like I said, going back to, you know, Christian Little and 17 years old. I mean, I think about all the stuff 17 years old. I mean, you know, this guy's, what, 18? So I get it. But, you know, it's one thing for me to be a knucklehead at that age. I didn't have a scholarship on the line. It's another thing for, you know, kids that have real things at stake and just not get it. And they have the ability to talk to people, you know, that I didn't have that ability to talk to people and to get good, sound advice. And if it's not happening right now, like it does with a lot of young people, then maybe this is the wake-up call he needs. Maybe he gets everything straightened out and gets going in the right direction his next stop. Maybe he doesn't. Maybe this is just going to follow Caden Salter, in his college career. And that does happen too. So I know some fans will probably be upset with this because they wanted to see what this young man, I guess he was a four-star coming out of Texas? Mm-hmm. What he had to bring to the table because nobody got a chance to see it. But, you know, on the other hand, sometimes you just have to trust the people in place and realize that there's a lot of meetings that you weren't privy to that probably they had meetings after those meetings and said, you know what, does anybody believe this kid is getting it? And if the answer is no, then I don't have a problem saying, you know what, kid, good luck to you in the future. Go figure it out somewhere else.
Here's what I'm curious of in situations like this. Bringing it together, big picture of everything we've talked about this week of paying the players, name, image, likeness. There are going to be opportunities. Now, this year he wasn't going to play, but you never know that moving forward in the future that Caden Salter could have become the starting quarterback for the Tennessee Volunteers. That's a profitable position to be in if you're a young man. And if all this stuff, you know, keeps it's going through like it is, you know, here in a few years he could have been in a position to make some money as a college kid. Now he's not. How much? And I get it, players in the NFL that make millions and millions of dollars, we saw one here that was a first round pick that played one down, essentially four downs, and he blew it. So I get it, they make mistakes too and they got millions. But how much are these kids or their families going to think about, yeah, come on now, you got an opportunity here, not only to get an education and have a scholarship and then potentially go to the NFL, but you can make some money now, and you just, you know, it just went bye-bye, at least for the moment.
Well, we were right about the Seattle Kraken announcement today, coming up in about 35 minutes or so. the news has gotten out, and their first ever coach will be Dave Hextall. So the former Flyers coach, 4 years there. Well, he didn't even make it through the fourth season. He was the guy, I remember, spent all that time at North Dakota.
Yeah.
A lot of success there. I think he was there at least a decade. And then spent almost four seasons as the Flyers head coach. He sat out. He was, I think, an assistant last year. But
he was with the Maple Leafs.
Yeah, he was with Toronto as an assistant. And now he will get his second crack at being a head coach in the NHL.
I see what you did there.
With Seattle.
Second Kraken.
Kraken, huh?
That's an interesting hire.
I agree. Like, if I'm being honest, I'm like, I would be a little underwhelmed if I was Seattle with that hire. Like,
I don't.
Okay.
I don't love that.
Like, that's the best you could do. I don't know.
I thought it would be Rick Tocchet. That's kind of what I was thinking.
Well, clearly he was in the mix, but you know, maybe Hextall is. You know, obviously there's something they saw and they liked about him, but I don't know. If I'm in Seattle, I'm like, okay, that's the best. Okay.
Are there any more? What openings are out there right now? The Coyotes. That's it. Mm-hmm. There weren't many this year.
Nope.
Weren't many. Which?
Well, some have already been. The Rangers filled theirs, obviously.
Yeah, but I mean, they were only like four or five.
Yeah.
Anyway, which. Mm-hmm. You know, that's coming off last year, which they were a ton. They were like 9 or 10. I didn't expect too many because of
what you just said.
On.
Like, typically, yeah. You're going to get more than a year. Typically.
Yeah. So, Arizona, which is a dumpster fire, that's the only one that's out there.
Putting it mildly. All right, we will come back. Former Vanderbilt wide receiver, Jordan Matthews. We'll tell you what he has up his sleeve. Is a comeback in his future? Does he still want to be a player? We always have good talks with Jordan Matthews. We will do that next here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, Darren McFarland and Chase McCabe with you. Willie will join us here shortly. His son's baseball game is completed. He is headed back to the hotel, and he will join us here coming up. Former Vanderbilt wide receiver Jordan Matthews is on the line with us. We always enjoy our chats with him, and he now joins us. Jordan, how the heck are you?
I'm doing good, guys. How you guys doing?
Well, it's been it's been an interesting year plus for everybody, year and a half, as you know.
Yeah.
But I feel like everybody should be in good spirits, right? I feel like we're kinda coming out on the other side, and so that makes me happy and should make a lot of people happy. How about you?
I think so, too. You know, I think a lot of people thought coming out, this is going to be like a ton of new norms. And I think there are some, but, hey, a little bit of normalcy is not bad, you know. And so I think, just to see people back out together, not having too much trauma of wanting to get around other people. You know, it's like there's no better feeling than community. So it's just cool to, you know, even just being here back in Nashville, at this event I'm at now, just seeing a bunch of guys having a good time hanging out, it always lifts my spirits a little bit.
All right, we're going to get into what you just referenced, but I do want to ask you, since we haven't had you on since the hire, what do you make of Vanderbilt's hire of Clark Lee?
I think he's been going great. You know, Clark's done a great job, too, not just, obviously you can go back to the search committee and Ken is bringing in Clark. I mean, that's an incredible hire. Most people wouldn't expect a guy who was a part of the college football playoffs in a coordinator position at a school like Notre Dame. If you just threw that name up on a blank slate and said, okay, what coaching position do you think this guy took next? Most people would not guess Vanderbilt. But, man, the stars align. You know, obviously, Clark being a Vanderbilt alum, he understands what Vanderbilt has to offer and the potential of this place in this city. So he saw the diamond in the rough, and I think he saw the beauty of a school that, you know, I see and a lot of alumni sees, but maybe college football has yet to really be able to experience yet. So being able to bring him in, his steadiness, his consistency, I know is going to yield extremely positive dividends for the school and, you know, especially for the football program. But it's not just Clark. The people that he's hired, he's brought in some very talented coaches and incredible people throughout the business side, marketing, social media, like everybody is, you know, their hashtag this year is first class, and I can attest to that. I got to spend some time with them during the spring, and they truly are moving as a first class organization. I think they're going to put some W's in the win column this year because of it.
Hmm. Were you watching the, speaking of the W, last night, the exciting comeback in Omaha? Were you watching Tim Corbin and the boys get it done against Stanford last night?
Of course. You know, they the problem is the first time they played a little bit too late for me. And so this one, it was a little bit easier to stay up and watch for. But, man, how about that for your 800th win, too, for Coach Corbin?
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm really excited for them in this College World Series. I got a brother. I only got one brother, and he went to Mississippi State. So, you know, he's been in my ear ever since they started off 2-0. Yeah, yeah. But I'm like, hey, don't. He's my big brother, but I'm like, hey, don't poke the bear. You know, we're the big brother of this SEC national baseball field. So, I think we're going to use this momentum to go to push forward. So I'm excited. The pigeons been going good. You know, even the one loss we took, man, Leiter was on fire.
Yeah.
You know, it was just one got away. So, dude, they've been playing lights out. And to see them win in that fashion, you know, with no guys on base, two out, you know, that's just that Vanderbilt winning mentality that I think Coach Corbin's instilled, and that's why they're in the position they are now.
Two strikes, too. I mean,
yeah.
they're down to their last strike.
Right. Down to the last strike.
I got good news for you. That game that you referenced that you couldn't make it to the end, the Arizona game, was a five-hour game. The good news is Friday is an afternoon game. I don't know what your workout schedule is. And if they win, take care of business on Friday against NC State, they'll turn around and play again Saturday afternoon. So even if they're long games, they'll be in the middle of the day.
That works a lot better for a dude with two kids, both under 2 years old. So I
yes,
think I
it does.
Make those games.
Yeah. Set them, put more, them down for a nap, and you can watch the game.
100%.
Okay, you referenced what you're doing right now. One, let's just get to the first time I saw this, I'm like, what? So let's talk about this whole tight end, switching to tight end position. What's going on that front, and how did you come to that conclusion?
You know, I had a good talk with TD a couple weeks ago, you know, about it. I would say it's something that's honestly been on my mind probably for the last 2 years. You know, I've played with guys who people would consider, you know, smaller tight ends, but, you know, you can call them smaller tight ends, but they're extremely effective in the way the offenses they're in utilize them. You know, I played with Trey Burton, who was sensational. He was with the Eagles. I came over to the 49ers and played with, you know, Ross Dwelly. I spent some time at the Patriots, so I got to see Jacob Hollister. And, you know, I spent time around these guys, and, I mean, some of them only have, like, 15 pounds on me. And they're thriving in this position. And, you know, I go over to the 49ers, and we line up, I think, the first day, you know, to do sprints in the offseason. And I'm doing sprints against Marquise Goodwin. I'm like, okay, this wide receiver position starting to pick up a little bit of speed on me. And so, you know, but honestly, I say that, you know, jokingly, because I always felt like I could compete with the guys, you know, no matter, you know, what gifts God gave them. I knew that as a receiver, I could still go out there and perform at a high level. But the fact of the matter was when I came into the league, I played for a coach who had a specific system, and that system was Chip Kelly's, where his number one receiver he wanted in the slot. And so that's what I played, you know, exclusively was inside. So I learned the slot position inside out. And anybody can put up those numbers in that film, and they will know during those years I was one of the most productive guys inside in the entire NFL. And so that skill plus where I felt like, you know, I saw the league going, and it really kind of culminated watching the draft this year. You know, I'm at home, I'm training, you know, asking my agent, you know, about some teams and trying to field some calls and just not hearing much. And, you know, the draft goes through and you look at the first round and, you know, I think every receiver that got drafted was under 6 foot. And that's not a knock on them. These guys are going to be number one receivers, but it just showed kind of a paradigm shift at the position where it's going smaller. When I first came into the league, it was guys like Jordy Nelson, DeAndre Hopkins, Dez Bryant, you know, Andre Johnson, T.O., I was like, that was the prototype, Calvin Johnson, Larry. But now, you know, on the back end, now it's like Tyreek, A.B., Odell, you're going to have your DKs sprinkled in there, your D-hops still sprinkled in there. But I played in San Fran the last 2 years, and our most productive receivers were all under 6 foot. But with that position going smaller, you've seen the tight end position get smaller too. And so, you know, I looked up and talked to, you know, I won't mention who the teams are, but just reached out to a couple of teams, me and my agent. We asked them if they liked this idea. They felt like it was a good idea. We asked them a target weight, and they gave us 235. We're like, all right, let's do it, you know. So I'm not going to tell people that have definites, like, hey, if I get to this, this is on the table. But I will say that, you know, teams gave me a specific target weight of 235. I played last year at 215. And so, you know, if you give me a target, I'm going to hit it. So I'm weighing 235 now. I only increased in body fat by like 1%. I'm sitting at 8% body fat. So I've been working my tail off just for an opportunity. And if I get one, I'm going to make the most of it.
Hmm. Titans could use an upgrade at that position, just saying.
Yes, they could.
Hmm. There's a little tight end you camp going on here in town. Yep. Guy maybe you got to know out in San Francisco that we've learned lives here. In the offseason, he goes by last name Kittle, George Kittle.
Yep.
So tell us what you're doing.
So today's really kind of the first day of going into meetings and stuff. So we kind of had just an icebreaker. Everybody just came in town. You know, we went to the hotel that George was generous enough to put everybody up in, just kind of had an icebreaker. So just got a chance to kind of break bread and just fellowship with a lot of the guys. That came in. I think there's like 50 tight ends here right now. And, you know, for a guy like me, I'm just trying to soak up knowledge. You know, if a conversation, you know, was maybe shifted into something, you know, non-football related, I might be like, yeah, but tell me about that blocking scheme. You know, I'm trying to pick up as many tidbits as possible through this journey. But no, I mean, it was just a good time hanging out. But today is going to be more, you know, in the film room. Guys getting up and talking, you know, guys like Mercedes Lewis, who's played, what, this is year 18 for him, like, golly, you know, so how much wisdom does that guy have? Greg Olsen is not a man in this whole, you know, a part of this whole thing that doesn't respect him. George is going to get up there and teach, you know, what he knows. He's probably the best two-way, you know, tight end in the league when it comes to blocking and route running. And then Travis, I think, is going to get up and do some teaching, too, on some pre-snap stuff. So, just soaking up knowledge, man, just spending time with the guys. I think it's going to be a really good deal.
We're talking to Jordan Matthews, former Vanderbilt wide receiver, now looking to make the switch to tight end in the National Football League. So in your conversations, I mean, what's something that maybe you didn't know about the position that has come up that maybe intrigued you?
I mean, like I said, the biggest thing that intrigued me was really what I did off my own intel, was just seeing that, you know, they don't all look like Rob Gronkowski, you know. Like, there's a reason he's the GOAT, you know. And so they come in all shapes and sizes. You look at Evan Engram and you look at Mercedes Lewis, and they both play the same position. So the way how, you know, if you had told somebody about, like, you know, the receiver position, I think everybody – who has any clue of football knows that receivers come in all shapes and sizes. I don't think people really looked at the tight end position that way until recently. I just kind of did my own intel, and that was probably the biggest thing, was that, hey, I can do this, you know. But I've always been a student of the game. I never just sat and film and just only watched the receiver position. I always watched what the tight ends were doing. Some of my best friends were tight ends when it came to Zach Ertz and Trey Burton, so I always kind of knew what they had on specific plays. So, there's a lot I need to learn, but at the same time, it's not going to be a ton of surprises.
So going back to Vanderbilt for a second, with everything that is happening with Chancellor Dearmeyer and Candace Story Lee, the money that's going into the athletic department, as somebody that went there, studied there, trained there, to hear that commitment to athletics means what to you?
It means a lot, you know, because I know how much Vanderbilt has to offer already. I know how much Vanderbilt has to offer already because I got guys yelling at me from the field. it has so much to offer, you know, already. You know, I tell people all the time, Vanderbilt's a school that's going to let you, that's going to give you things you can take with you. There's so many schools that offer things that, quite frankly, like, you know, I can show you a great stadium. I can show you these amazing jerseys. and all this stuff, but you really can't take any of that stuff with you when you leave, you know. But Vanderbilt, you always could take that education, a healthy lifestyle, those connections, those relationships that you build, because when you go to a school and you have to have those athletic and academic requirements on you, you're going to grow with those men in that locker room. Those are going to be lifetime relationships that you take with you. It's not just, hey, I'm here for 3 years, boom, I'm trying to go to a league, don't talk to me. There's a real community that's built. And so now you're going to still be able to foster those relationships, get that education, but also be able to experience some of the things that you could at these other big-time programs. I think once that investment goes in and we start seeing, you've already seen what's happening at the in the locker room, and once everything else around that place starts building up, I think teams are going to have a hard time competing against a school like Vandy, because there's not anything that you have to compromise when it comes to what you're looking for in a college.
Jordan, getting your thoughts as somebody that played the receiver position for so long, you know, we worked with Derek Mason, who would always tell you that he never dropped a pass and he was always open, and he would yell at coaches to get him the damn ball, as receivers like to do. Now with the Titans having A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, and you obviously have Josh Reynolds that was just brought in, you have Derrick Henry in the backfield, there's only so many footballs to go around. How do you handle that as a player, of knowing that, you know, if you got a ton of touches before, that maybe those numbers are going to go down, but ultimately the goal is to win?
I think there's a big shift happening now where that's very, like, I think guys understand that at a lot bigger rate now. And if you don't believe me, like, look at this. How much complaining did you hear coming out of the Buccaneers? Look how much talent was in that locker room. Did you ever hear anybody complain about getting the football? You know? Now, right, you can say, oh, that's because it was Tom. But at the same time, that's not the only place. You got guys now advocating for stars to come to their team. Like, why would A.J. Brown put it out there, I want Julio to come? You don't think he knows that there will be some balls that will go his way now? Like, I think the main point, I think guys are waking up to the fact that, yo, if we win, everybody wins. If you go win a Super Bowl, you can have 50 catches and you'll get paid the same check that the guy with 80 catches had on a losing team. And I think also, you know, I've seen guys with not the crazy amount of numbers play on a winning team and have that just really good film. Dude, they're going to still end up making the money they deserve at the end of the day. I think in the way that Tom's been able to dominate this league, I think people are seeing, like, yo, that's the goal. The goal is to win the Super Bowl. Like, you can have 100 catches, but who's going to be – your fantasy owners are going to be happy, okay, but who are you going to talk about that with 5 years later? You going to call up your boy that you played with in the league, like, hey, remember that year I had 100 catches? Like, no, you're going to call him back, like, hey, remember when we went and did it, we won the whole thing? And that's what guys are trying to get to. I think the NBA was the one that kind of started that trend. And, you know, as much as we say football is a copycat league within itself, I think sports in general, I think the NBA takes some stuff from the NFL, but the NFL takes a ton from NBA culture. And you ask all those guys who their favorite players are, KD, LeBron, they started this. They started the whole, hey, we'll take a pay cut in order to win. And then when the best guy in your league, Tom, is doing it, P. Mahomes is doing it, they're taking bargains in order to build up their team, I think that's kind of going to start to be a little bit of the new wave. I mean, we even saw Sammy do it. You know, he took a pay cut with the Chiefs last year so they could keep some of that squad together. And look what happened. They end up going back to the Super Bowl. So, you know, I think there's still that kind of narrative that people think that football players are walking around looking out for me. That may be more prevalent in their contract years, but for the most part, I think it's an understanding amongst these men that, hey, the main thing that you need to do is win.
Yeah, absolutely. Jordan Matthews here with us. And Jordan, we appreciate the time today. Best of luck with the tight end camp and the transition over to tight end, and really hope that you get an opportunity there. I think that's really cool.
Appreciate you, brother. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Jordan Matthews, longtime NFL wide receiver and former Vandy wide receiver. Always enjoy our chats with him. We'll have much more coming here on the show. Willie Donick going to join us in a little bit. We'll get an update on his son's game, but more coming. ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Always fun having Jordan Matthews on the program. We do appreciate him joining us back here on the DDC on this Thursday. Your chance to win tickets to Bonnaroo. pair of 4-day passes coming up before we get out of here.
So, I like that.
Just be listening for that opportunity. You just never know when it's going to happen. And it will happen before we get out of here. How about that? So pretty interesting discussion there with Jordan Matthews. It always is. We wish him nothing but the best. I don't know if he can pull this off. I don't know if he can be a tight end in the NFL. I know he wants to keep his NFL career going. He did not play last year. I don't know. And he's right. Because of the rule changes, these guys are getting smaller. I mean, you saw this in the draft. I mean, receivers getting taken, 5'10 receivers. Where before, as he said, it used to be like everybody was looking for the Julio Jones. Everybody was looking for the Calvin Johnson. Everybody was looking for the Larry Fisher. Everybody wanted that big wide receiver. And not that they don't still want them, but, you know, guys like Andre Johnson and DeAndre Hopkins, those big 6'4 receivers, or even bigger, 6'5. Because the game is all about speed and you can't do the things that you used to do, the rule changes, smaller guys are more brought up. Tyreek Hill, I mean, look at him. He is a number one receiver, superstar receiver in this league, albeit he's got Patrick Mahomes throwing to him. Last time I checked, he is not 6'4", and he's not even close to 6'4". And there are a lot of other receivers like that, too. And Jordan Matthews is not a small guy, but he's a smaller framed guy. Maybe not in height, but in weight, and he talked about getting his weight. So he's got the frame. He's got the length. He just doesn't – the frame, he needs to bulk up a little bit at that position. I don't know. I do wonder. He was obviously very hush-hush on teams that he's talked to. I do wonder if the Titans are in that mix.
Yeah, I mean, I would think – so, one, if you're a team and you have a player that, you know, is making a position switch, I mean, I do believe that the NFL is such a tight-knit circle that somebody's going to at least look. You know, like, okay, I'll give him a look, see what happens. If you're the Titans – and you know that you need to address this position, and you know you need to do it on the cheap, of course you should be one of those teams. He's right in your backyard. You can go to this camp, check it out. And, you know, if you see something, then what's the harm in at least signing him and bringing him to camp and seeing what he can do? Because they're thin at that position. You know, I think Firkser is going to take a step and can help this team. He's made big plays in the past. Swaim can be your blocking tight end. But the bottom line is they need help at that position. If somebody gets hurt, they're in trouble. You know, Pinkney decided, you know, he had a great opportunity, but he didn't need to show up to OTAs. So, okay, I don't know exactly what that means, but I don't think it can be a good thing for him. So you got a guy that, and we know Jordan, we know his work ethic, we know what kind of person he is, what kind of man he is. That right there is worth a look if I'm the Titans and I'm John Robinson, because that's a type of guy that I want in my locker room. So I think this is awesome that he's doing this. He's showing the commitment and willingness to learn how to change the position. And because, yes, they're similar, but they're different. And so he is changing positions. I mean, it's probably easier for him to go from wide receiver to tight end than it would be for Tim Tebow to go from quarterback to tight end, especially being out of the league as long as Tebow has been. But I admire him to at least try. And, you know, if you're the Titans, why not? Take a look.
And I don't believe Tebow was there, by the way.
Which is a mistake. If he's not, that's a mistake.
I don't think he is.
You're trying to make the changeover there to tight end, and you can learn from some of the best in the league at that position? That's a mistake. I mean, I if anything, Jordan's going about this right because he's going to a camp to learn from the best. Guys that have done it at a high level. Elite, as you like to say. So you got to give him that, whether it works or not.
But do you know where this camp is, this tight end U fantasy camp?
I don't. I know it's here.
Yeah.
I know. Is that what you meant?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah, no, I know it's in Nashville.
No,
I just
where?
Don't know where.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know where in Nashville. I mean, I would assume a D1 or Hell, could be at Lipscomb.
Innsworth, I was going to say, is that one of the private schools?
Seems like Lipscomb is a good place to go.
Mm-hmm. My guess is Brentwood Academy. That's where George Kittle was this time last year in the offseason working out. So if I had to guess.
Well, doesn't George's dad coach at Lipscomb with Dilfer?
I did not know that.
He does.
Maybe.
He does.
No, he does. He's,
yeah.
So, he's an offensive line coach.
Yeah. So
George Kittle's dad. He's been on Trent's staff for years.
Yeah, he's been there for a while. That's one of the reasons why George Kittle is here in the offseason and calls Nashville home. So, I don't know. I mean, because look, we've talked about in off and on in the offseason in our Titans conversations, we always seem to circle back to tight end. Like, hey, are they good? What do they want to do here? Because right now I think they have four on the roster. They have Swaim, Firkser, Pinckney, the kid out of Alabama, and then maybe one more. Mm-hmm. And that's it.
Not exactly the who's who of tight ends.
Yeah, none that blow you away. And I don't mean that disrespectful towards Firkser, but you haven't asked him to be a starting tight end before. So
maybe he's ready for that role.
It could be. I mean, I know there was a time, and it's still the case. He had some drops last year at key times, but for the most part, you throw the ball to Firkser, he's making the catch. He's been very good about that.
We'll come back. Hour number three. Don't forget Elliot Friedman coming up at 1 o'clock. Hour number three of Darren Donick and Chase next.